Hey everyone, welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Voyager actor, who also played the role of Peter Wood in a 1985 episode of The Twilight Zone, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil, and myself, your favorite forever ensign, Garrett Wong. Remember, you can get the full version of this podcast by signing up to become a patron at patreon.com/ The Delta Flyers. How was that episode of The Twilight Zone to work on?
The Twilight Zone. Yeah. We just talked about that recently because of the Disney Ranch location where we shot Memorial.
That's right.
And that was the first place that I, the first kind of location that I ever filmed on in California.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It was crazy. I was going to school. I was at Juilliard, and it was in the summer. It was during the summer of that year. I had a commercial agent, and I'd gotten it through like a roommate's friend who knew these people that had a commercial agency, and I hadn't really gone out much on anything.
Right.
But this commercial agent sent me out for an episode. It was one of the first episodes of The Twilight Zone.
Okay, that's like a little weird.
Yeah.
This is your commercial agent, your theatrical agent sending you out on that.
But it was in New York back in the 80s, and they kind of crossed over a little bit sometimes. They mostly did kids. It was mostly a kids agency, actually. Right.
Okay.
It's funny. I was just thinking about this agency because I was cleaning out boxes, organizing in the house, and I found a box of these old
headshots.
No, I found. So the name of the agency was Chronic and Kelly.
Okay, Chronic and Kelly.
Jane Chronic and somebody Kelly or something.
I like the name already. Very
Chronic
cool.
and Kelly.
Yes.
And it was a kids agency that did mostly commercials. And I ended up there oddly by accident. They sent me out for Twilight Zone. I booked it. And they were so thrilled because it was a small little agency that they gave me a jacket of the agency that had and I still have that jacket.
I just found
it recently.
That's
and it's
so
like
cool.
This black satin jacket with like pink lettering on the back, Chronic and Kelly agency, talent agency.
Yeah.
And I remember when they gave me that as like a reward for booking a big job.
Yeah.
I used to wear that around town. I felt like, oh, I'm a professional now. I have a professional agency jacket on. Look at me. It just felt like such a status symbol. You know what I mean?
I love
it. You just don't get these jackets if you're not a working actor.
I love that it's still in your wardrobe, though. That
it
you
still
have it.
Still,
yeah.
It feels like one of those things I just don't want to ever let go.
And I'm going to tell you, I was going to ask you that. Please do not let go of that. Keep that in your collection. That has to go to the Delta Flyers museum that opens posthumously after we both pass away, right? So they'll have everything the jacket will be there.
Okay.
Yes.
That's funny.
Yeah.
But the show, Twilight Zone was very exciting. I did it the summer after my freshman year at Juilliard. And then it came out in the fall and it was very well received. I was really proud of that. And it's funny because I was in Juilliard studying all this classical theater. And so when I was doing it, the role I played was this modern kid who gets a fever and he starts telepathically speaking with a girl in the 1600s in Salem, Massachusetts.
Oh, wow.
And they have telepathy. And then the people around her, they think that she's a witch. She goes on a witch trial. And then I had to look in history books to come up with a way to get her out of this.
Oh my gosh. Witch trial. I love this premise. I love the storyline.
So it was kind of cool.
Yeah.
But I was speaking very precisely with my Juilliard
trained
voice work.
Yes.
And then they had cast Justine Bateman, who was on Family Ties.
Of course. Yes.
Who's a Valley girl. Mm. They cast Justine as the witch. And the director kept saying to me, you sound like an old English settler and she sounds like a modern Valley girl. And we need to switch it. Like she needs to sound
like the
more
old English,
classical. Yeah. And so stop talking Juilliard. Stop talking like you're from Juilliard. And it was very hard because I had spent an entire year getting drilled in my head, like, you know, precise consonants and, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Did you make the adjustment?
I feel like I tried, but the last time I saw a piece of that when it was on reruns or something, I was like, oh yeah, I can hear the Juilliard.
It's still there.
The heavy Juilliard, yeah. You know, affectation that it was just being drilled into me. But anyway, it was fun.
Were you a fan of Twilight Zone before you booked that?
I was, yeah. Okay. I loved Twilight Zone.
So
yeah.
Booking that was pretty exciting for you.
Yeah. Right? And the reboot, the relaunch of that show in the 80s was kind of a big deal.
It was a big deal. I remember that.
Yeah. Twilight Zone reboot was, and then it went on as a syndicated show after a couple of years on CBS. And I think the brand has gotten watered down, but at the time it felt like, that is a big brand to be a part of, and it was a big deal. So, yeah.
So this is a project that you booked while still being at Juilliard as a student. Well, I guess my next question would be, in your Juilliard class, was it the same for the other classmates? Were they also booking things left and right, or were you the only one?
There were one of my classmates. His name's John Tenney. Mm-hmm. He's gone on to a great career. John left in our freshman year to do the first national tour of The Real Thing, the Broadway play, which was a big hit. Mm-hmm. So he had already left to do a job. And then that summer, another classmate had done a production out at the Guthrie Theater. So he was, that maybe was going to go to Broadway. So he was kind of on a track. There were a few people that were working, but it was mostly theater stuff.
Right.
There weren't as many doing film or TV. And
you were the one hitting those roles, right?
Yeah, I started getting a couple of those. The German little indie film, the Twilight Zone episode. I think I did a couple of commercials that summer.
Yeah.
So I was working. And then a few months later into my second year is when the All My Children people called and offered me a two-year contract to do a soap opera. And that's when I left school in my second year. So.
Well, what was the mindset of a Juilliard classically trained actor booking non-theater roles, booking television, film?
Was it looked on as
a negative thing, or was it like, ooh, you hit the promised land?
I think if it had been some big feature film with Kevin Kline, you know, starring opposite, you know, Kevin Kline or Christopher Reeves or, you know, somebody famous,
sure,
that would have been treated differently. You know, I was getting an episode of The Twilight Zone. I'm getting... you know, a daytime soap opera. So the things that I was getting were not looked at as like worthy of leaving school, you know.
Gotcha.
And I disagreed. So I left.
Yeah. So you so you left. And that is exactly what happened. You did leave. Yeah.
I did.
All right. Okay. So this week's episode is Tsunkatse. So I am excited to go watch.
How do you say it? Tsunkatse?
I say Tsunkatse. Yes. Being of Chinese, being Chinese American and being able to speak Mandarin, there are a lot of TNS sounds that come out at the same time. Yeah. Tsunkatse is how I say it.
I think I've always
like tsunami, said tsunami, Tsunkatse, like that.
Yeah. I think I've always said, now I'm trying to get your pronunciation out of my head. I know mine is different. I think I've always said Tsunkatse.
Oh, so you don't even pronounce the first T.
I don't think so.
Tsunkatse. Yeah.
Tsunkatse.
It's spelled Tsunkatse.
Now I'm so confused. Tsunkatse. I don't know what I ever called it.
Tsunkatse.
I have no earthly idea. Now I'm confused. Tsunkatse. Tsunkatse? Tsunkatse.
Shaka Khan.
I don't know.
Shaka Khan. Yeah. Are you ready for this episode of Shaka Khan? Come on.
I am totally ready. I really don't know what I've called it in the past. Now I'm confused. I'm going to call it what you call it.
Tsunkatse. But you have not called it. You have not pronounced it the way I've been pronouncing it.
No. No.
Wow.
Tsunkatse. I think I said Tsunkatse.
Tsunkatse?
I don't know. I'm literally confusing myself.
You are confusing yourself and me now.
Yeah.
So it's a double confusion right now. Thank you for that.
Shaka Khan.
That's it.
Shaka Khan.
Yes. Let's watch this episode of Shaka Khan, and we'll be right back with our recap and discussion of Tsunkatse. And Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material. We are back from watching Tsunkatse.
Tsunkatse, or... Soonkatzee, or I don't know how to pronounce it.
All right.
Kati. I really have been mispronouncing this.
You have and I still been. Can't.
Anyway,
it's okay.
It is what it is. It's okay. A made up word.
It's all right. Okay. Let's start off with our poetry synopsis of Tsunkatsi. And here's my haiku. Here we go.
Thank you.
Crew loves Tsunkatsi. Seven must fight for Tuvok. Lucky Hirogen.
Good. Good, good, good.
All right.
All right. Here we go with our limerick for Tsunkatsi. The crew is on shore leave, but Seven wants to do science stuff. Kidnapped and forced to fight, Tuvok's looking pretty rough. Tom, Neelix, Harry, Chakotay are watching. The Rock is there. He's definitely rocking. It's not Seven's strength, but her humanity makes her tough.
Ah, nice. Yeah, very good.
Pretty good. Mm-hmm. This is a hard one. This is a tough one for me.
This episode was tough, you're saying, or that limerick was tough?
All of it.
Okay,
the whole
you.
Experience for me. This one, you know, I'm probably showing my hand here a little, but this one was tough for me.
Let's dive right into it.
Okay. Let's dive in.
Let's talk about writers. Let's talk about guest stars. Yeah. Let's talk about directors. Okay. By the way, how lucky was I? I guessed that on the money.
I don't understand because you never say Mike Vahar.
I know.
And you said it and it was right.
And it was right on the money.
I'm getting a detective to figure out how you've pulled that one off. That's a tough one.
I said, all right, if he already went with, we already went with Kraker. We had Kraker in the episode before. You picked, who'd you pick? I forgot who you said.
For this one?
Yeah.
I said Livingston.
You said Livingston. And I was like, I got to come up with someone other than, and I was going to say Anson Williams. And
really?
I was like, no, yeah. And then I was like, no. I'm going to go with another name. And Mike Vahar bubbled up onto my tongue.
Unbelievable.
And I got to say, I'm right on the money on that. I was so excited. Okay.
Okay. Mike Vahar directed. We've talked about him before. Yeah. Bob Doherty wrote the script.
And I love Robert Doherty. I love his dialogue. He does such a good job with everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This story was by Gannon Kenny, who must have been an outside pitch.
Must have been. Yeah. Mm-hmm. First time seeing that name.
Our guest stars, Jeffrey Combs as Pink. So good to see him. This was the first episode he did with us, right? Or maybe the only
episode
that he did on Voyager. Wow. Well, Jeffrey's phenomenal. His very first job, 1981, a movie called Honky Tonk Freeway.
Oh, my
Harry
God.
Gar.
Thank you.
Yep. Jeffrey Combs. He'd done a lot of theater before.
Jeffrey's great. So talented.
He's great. And you know, I don't even know where to begin with his Star Trek connections because he did so many episodes of Deep Space Nine, 30 or 40 episodes, maybe. He did, you know, a dozen episodes or so of Enterprise. He's been on, I forget, he may be tied for the most characters ever played in the Star Trek.
I don't think he's tied. I think he wins it. I think
he may even be the winner.
I really think he's the winner. I mean, the number of characters, different characters.
Is unbelievable.
Unbelievable, really is. But that's a testament to how good of an actor he is.
He's a wonderful actor and a wonderful human being.
Who's next on our docket?
Next is J.G. Hertzler.
Love J.G.
Another, you know, regular in the Star Trek franchise.
Yeah.
He plays the Hirogen fighter, which I never would have guessed.
I completely forgot that JG was in this. And I forgot that Jeffrey Combs was in it. And plus JG sort of does a little bit of an affectation to his voice. So there's certain times when you're like, is that JG? Yeah, it's different.
JG's first job in show business, in 1978, he appeared on the soap opera General Hospital.
What?
Yeah. Daytime was his beginnings. And our last guest star, obviously, is The Rock.
The Rock. Yeah.
Yes. Dwayne Johnson, The Rock. So The Rock, I always thought that this was his first acting role, that he had just done wrestling.
No, that's incorrect. Correct?
It is incorrect. Mm-hmm. His first acting job was that 70s show.
Mm.
As on the sitcom, playing a character named Rocky Johnson.
What year was that?
1999.
Well, Rocky Johnson, I think that's his dad's name. So maybe What year?
A year before 1999.
99. So 1 year before. So this was was Voyager his second acting job then?
No. The Net.
Oh boy.
A TV show, The Net.
Okay. So
was right before us.
That 70 shows, The Net, and then Voyager.
Us. Yeah.
Three times a charm. The third one was it. And that's what sort of launched him. I'm going to say our show launched him into the stratosphere.
Agreed. Must have done it. But his very first credit as an actor was in the U.S. Wrestling Association Championship Wrestling episode in 1996. He played a character named Flex Cavana. First wrestler. Character that he played before he was The Rock.
Yeah.
He was Flex Cavana.
Flex Cavana.
In 1996. And just so everybody knows, the wrestling entertainment is, you know, the wrestlers that you see like The Rock, that's not real fighting. In fact, I remember once. I took my niece. So I called my niece. I'm going to make this story really quick. I called my niece one time. And I said, WWE is, I didn't call her. She texted me. Yeah. My niece texts me and she says, "Hey, Uncle Robbie," this is in Atlanta.
Yeah.
"Hey, Uncle Robbie, I just saw that WWE is coming to Atlanta. And I remember we had talked about that. And wouldn't that be fun to go?" And I said to Rebecca, "I never remember talking to Abby about WWE. What is she talking about? I never, it's fake wrestling. Why would I ever want to go?" But I said, you know, if my niece says, "Uncle Robbie, you want to go?" I'm going to say yes. So I got us tickets. We go to WWE. We go have a dinner, Uncle Robbie dinner. We go out to see the WWE. We're watching. And about halfway through, she goes, "Uncle Robbie," she said, "I don't know if this doesn't seem real. That's not what I expected." And I was like, oh, she thought it was real. And then it occurred to me that one time my niece and I had talked about MMA.
Oh,
we had talked about MMA. And I was like, I really enjoy it. And she says, "Me too. I love it." I was like, that's so surprising, Abby, that you like MMA.
Yeah.
She'd mixed it up.
She mixed the two.
So we went to WWE. World Wrestling Entertainment, which is fake.
I feel like you should have said spoiler before you said it's fake, because there may be people out there who are still diehard wrestling fans that believe it all. They do.
Well, part of the fun of the fans is that they go along with it. All the drama, because it's kind of like a soap opera.
It's a soap opera in the ring. That's what it is.
Anyway, that's The Rock. That's our guest stars. That's
you know, he did play football, right?
He did play football, not professional. He just played college.
No, professional. CFL.
Oh,
here in Calgary. This is where I'm recording today. So he was a Calgary Stampeder.
Didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
I knew he played college ball, but I didn't know he played. Wow.
Okay.
Well, that's very cool. All
Moving on.
Here we go.
Yes.
Let's go into it.
Let's dive into this. Wow. Look at this opening scene. It's literally a WWE match. I mean, just all the lights and the music and it was really
we go right into an arena.
Yeah.
Yes. It opens with an arena and there's lots of different aliens species in the audience. There's even some human Starfleet officers in the audience. So it's very confusing. It's like, is this a game on the holodeck?
Right.
I didn't know what this, I couldn't remember this episode really, except that The Rock was in it. So I was like, it made no sense. So Starfleet is watching with all these aliens. Yeah. These two fighters come out.
Right.
And one fighter is kind of martial artsy. He's moving around. And the other, this very fancy entrance shot. And we introduce a Hirogen fighter, which is J.G. Hertzler coming out.
Mm-hmm.
They have lights on their chest and on their hands that I didn't understand. I was like, are those like boxing gloves? Like if they hit with a light. And then I saw there was some electrical shocks when they make contact.
If you punch the disc, that little disc on the center of their chest, that's what makes them have the electricity or something.
The electrical shock.
By the way, when they had those on and we were watching them fight, I thought, oh my God, that is so cool. Because at the time I was so into trance and still am, you know, but I was going to kind of like raves and whatnot, and using glow sticks. And so I thought, those are glow sticks that are already on your gloves, basically.
Right.
So I really wanted a pair, but I couldn't get one. So
couldn't get one.
No.
Yeah, they were pretty cool. It was a cool design. Those little lights, they were like pads.
Yeah.
They were kind of on the back of the hand, a pad, and then a circle on the chest.
Right.
Great fight choreography. I did remember that this set was reused from Virtuoso, that they expanded the theater set into a full circle and added some stuff. And this is the Tsunkatsu set.
Yeah.
But the Hirogen ultimately wins. And then we reveal at the end of this that it's not just extras in the audience. We've got B'Elanna and Chakotay, and they are pumped.
They're into
So we go out on that moment of revealing B'Elanna and Chakotay are watching this fight. And I just didn't understand. I was so confused. We come back. We got a space shot. Captain's log. She says the crew is enjoying shore leave on the Norcadian homeworld.
Right.
So must be a friendly place if we're having shore leave. We must have met them, figured out they're safe. You know, we're trading a little or whatever.
Yeah.
She's going to visit Pandari, the planet in the neighboring system. And over that captain's log, we cut to the hallway, see Janeway walking down with a duffel bag. I've never seen
it's her overnight
anyone
bag.
Go on a away mission with a duffel bag. But we had
big duffel bags and we came back from our 2 week away mission. Remember the prior?
Yeah, episode. That's true.
So we did have that. Yeah. So
yeah. Feels a little new, like this whole thing. And we're going to get to Seven later, what she's carrying.
Yeah.
But anyway, she's leaving with a duffel bag. They got to walk and talk. She's reminding Chakotay he's going to be in charge.
Yeah.
He says, you know, don't forget about the diagnostic on the shield generator. And he's like, on it. And she says, also keep an eye on Neelix. And he's got a project.
Yeah.
He's trying to use Borg technology to enhance his stove. Be careful. And Chakotay is like, well, I'll assign a security detail to that. maybe a little overkill for Neelix. But anyway, she takes off. B'Elanna joins Chakotay here. And she's pumped up, B'Elanna.
Yeah.
And she wants to go back and watch more of the fighting.
Yeah.
And she wants Chakotay to go back with her. And she says, you know, I've checked. Harry's free this afternoon. And in this part of the conversation, I pause. I'm like, what's going on? B'Elanna's telling Chakotay she wants to go on a date. And she's saying Harry's free this afternoon. Is that for a date with him? Or I was like, isn't she dating Paris?
Like, you almost said Harry.
I know. I don't know.
You did.
But I was like, what about Tom? Why isn't she saying, hey, Chakotay, I want to go with Tom to the fight? What the heck?
It's Robbie, it's clearly a Maquis thing. It's a Maquis thing. That's
maybe
it
is. Okay.
Yeah, that's all.
Okay. Next, we're in the mess hall, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
And B'Elanna asks, as they walk, she walks in with Chakotay to the mess hall, and she says to Neelix, I hope that's not lunch. And she's pointing at this giant, it looks like a punch bowl of like yellow.
Did you say Jell-O? What would you say thing looks like?
It looked like Jell-O or pudding.
Yes.
But it was gross. She's like, I hope that's not lunch.
Yeah.
And then we reveal Neelix. He's sunburned, but like only on one side of his face. And he says it's Leola root ointment, and he needs it for his sunburn. It's a Talaxian thing, and said he fell asleep and he got sunburned because he forgot his dermaline hypospray, and he fell asleep under two suns. So, oh man, I can't imagine. But he also says something like, you know, it'll heal up and turn a nice, what did he say? A nice amber color or something. I didn't know Talaxians like sunbathe.
Right. But I also did not know that Leola root could serve as an ointment. Who knew that?
I know.
It's sort of the fix-all for everything, isn't it? Yeah, put a little Leola root on it. Yeah. If you skin your knee, rub a little Leola root on it. You're good.
Yeah. But they discuss the Tsunkatsu tournament. Seven comes over, and Seven basically says, you know what? It's crude and pointless, this kind of fighting.
Yes.
Tuvok's there. They invite Tuvok, and he says he's got plans to go on an away mission to a micro nebula, he says. And I guess Seven and Tuvok have planned, you know, on their shore leave, they're going to go hang out at this micro nebula and do tests and science.
This is the best.
This
is so nerdy. It's the two driest, nerdiest characters on Voyager deciding to hang out together to look at this micro nebula, which at one point I was thinking, why aren't these two together? These two are perfect for each other.
Yes, okay. They are.
Keep
they
going. Are.
Chakotay says, okay, well, you can do whatever you want. Please try to enjoy yourselves, he says. And then as everybody leaves, I love at the end of this scene, everybody leaves and Neelix is kind of in the foreground and he slowly turns. You know when you have a sunburn and like everything hurts?
Yeah.
And you just don't want to move?
Yeah.
I thought Ethan Phillips played that last moment. Everybody leaves and it's like the slowest turn. And he takes a breath and then he just exits the shot. And it was it was a funny bit.
I love the realism that Johnny put in there. Good job.
The sunburn. The sunburn sense memory of it all. We've all been there.
Oh, my goodness.
We go to Cargo Bay next.
Yeah. Oh, you're in this scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Paris comes in with the navigational data that Seven had requested.
Right.
And I thought it was funny because you never see scenes with Paris and Seven.
It was so bizarre. I was like, what are you doing in this scene with her?
I know.
It's so rare.
If I'm in a scene with Seven, it's with a bunch of other people. Yeah, but just clearly, the two of us chatting.
Never.
Which is so funny because I thought it was a fun scene. Like
great scene. I think
they are an interesting odd couple to have together because he's so not, you know, Paris is so not logical or interested in anything that she's interested in.
Right.
So it would be fun to see them. I know we don't. I know it's not going to happen,
correct,
but it would be fun to see them together more. But he comes in, she's packing these giant containers and he starts giving her crap about that. He's like, oh, you're like B'Elanna, you overpack.
Yeah.
And he asks her about some kind of little tool.
Yeah.
And he goes, why can't you just replicate this thing? Yeah. She said, I prefer this one.
The isomodulator.
the isomodulator.
Yeah, and I love that. Because you can easily replicate that. So you don't have to pack the dang thing. But she's like, I prefer this one. Like, that's her favorite isomodulator that she's always been using.
She's putting them into these giant barrels, like plastic barrels. Which just don't seem very practical for stacking or carrying around or anything. So,
yeah. I mean, the only good thing would be you roll the barrel. You could roll.
Yeah, which she doesn't
she
in the
doesn't
next
do
scene.
It. No,
she does
she's
not do.
Carrying both of them. Yeah, I love it. Very.
But Paris does say in the scene, he says, oh, yeah, B'Elanna has special things she likes that she always brings a stuffed animal away with her on missions.
This is new info for us.
I was like, what?
We're like, where did this happen?
Yeah. I thought, this is insane. I've never seen a stuffed animal in her room. I've never talked about it. It's a cool detail, but it seems a little late in the game.
I agree. Yes. But can I just say, Toby the Targ, I really feel like that should be in our merch store. We should have a Toby the Targ stuffed animal. Yes.
That's a good one. Yeah. Toby the Targ sounds cute.
Heck yeah.
And by the way, as soon as Paris said, oh yeah, B'Elanna always brings a stuffed animal, I pictured something like a Targ.
You did?
Okay. Yes. I totally, that would be what she has.
Okay.
Seven does ask Paris, she says, well, can Toby the Targ correct hull oblations? Your comparison is flawed. And she walks off. And I love Tom's or my double take at the end. It was like, you know, because she says, can Toby the Targ correct hull oblations?
Yeah.
And Paris starts to go, and then she goes, your comparison is flawed, and just walk, you know, like mic drop and walks out.
Yeah. Yeah. Good and reaction.
It was funny.
It was good.
Nice light comedy. I'm proud of those little moments.
Yeah, it was. I think it was a wonderful scene between the two of you. Really?
Yeah, it was fun.
Really was.
We go into the hall next.
Yeah.
And Doctor's asking Seven if she would join him for a tour of all the cultural hotspots on the planet. And she says, no, she's busy with Tuvok. Now, she's walking down the hall carrying two of these giant plastic barrels. And I was like, why was this the choice? And then I thought, okay, Well, I know that there's going to be fighting because the Rock's in the episode.
Yeah.
Maybe it's to foreshadow that she's strong, that it's just
okay.
Something that that no normal person would do.
I think that's a good way to put it. I like your rationalization. Good.
I mean, I don't know if I'm reading into it or just
I'm going to go with that because there's no other reason why she would carry that. She'd have a duffel bag or something. Why would she carry?
Or she'd have them on a cart.
Exactly. But still, she's carrying them like they're nothing too. Yeah. Right. She's walking like, and clearly they're filled with equipment. So they're probably each like, I don't know, I'm going to guess 100 pounds each.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So it's very impressive. That's what it is. Foreshadowing.
Super strength. Did you notice the extra walking behind her, the mistiming on the extra, by the way?
No, what happened?
So it's in a two shot and you see someone walking towards them.
Yeah.
From the down at the hall. And almost gets to them, literally is going to walk behind Seven.
Yeah.
And then it cuts over, just before he passes, it cuts over to her close up.
Yeah.
And I expected him to walk by in that matched action.
Yeah. And he's not.
And he doesn't walk
he's not
by.
There.
And then like 4 seconds later, he walks by.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, wow, guys. Like,
they didn't catch that. Oh,
you should have
goodness.
Not cut it that way because it just, those little things. Always
they bug
distract
you, don't they?
Me.
Yeah,
they really
and I think
do.
They bug people that are in the know for sure.
And even if you're not in the know, there's something about the cut that you go,
something's off. Yes.
You don't even if you can't pinpoint it,
yes,
it's a distraction from the reality of the scene. So.
Yeah. Did you feel like the doctor was hitting on Seven right here? It felt a little hey, let's go on a date, it's gonna be wonderful. Yeah. And then Seven's like, no, I already have a date with Tuvok, basically. We're going to go look at this micro nebula. Why don't you join us? And the doctor's just, it's too funny. You'd think he'd be into this, but he's not. He's like, nope, I'm going to, he does this quick, vaudeville kind of exit out of there.
He says, no, thanks. And off he goes. And now we go to a shuttle flyby. And it is not the flyer.
No, it's just a standard shuttle, correct?
Standard shuttle, because I guess Janeway took the flyer, I think,
Janeway
right?
took, yeah, you gave her the keys, and she says, okay, I'm going to take the flyer.
We go inside the shuttle, and there's silence.
I love this scene, though. It's funny. Just so funny, because she's like, they're talking about the fact that, she feels bad, because the doctor's been trying to encourage her to engage in conversation during awkward silences. Tuvok responds with, did you find the silence awkward? And Seven's like, no. And Tuvok says, nor did I. So at this point, I realized these two are perfect. They should be together. I mean, this is ridiculous.
Well, she's literally the first line. There's this long, long silence. And then she says, 2 hours, 37 minutes, 13 seconds. That's how long we've been without verbal communication. And I thought what she meant was they were out of calm range.
Right.
I realized they haven't talked for two hours, 37 minutes. And Rebecca said at this point, she goes, oh, that sounds like you.
What?
Because I hate awkward silences. So Rebecca's fine with like silence and we don't have to talk. We just sit here and do our own things. And I am not. And okay, Rebecca's like, you would count. You would say, oh, it's been 32 minutes, 43 seconds since the last time you said, ask me a question or something. Anyway, she talks about how the doctor says she's got to engage in conversation.
Yeah.
And then there's an alarm.
Yeah. Vessel approaching on an intercept course.
Mm-hmm. They try to hail it. Nothing.
Yeah. Nothing. And then they try to hail Voyager. And there's a dampening field that this alien ship has basically placed upon their shuttle. They've lost engines, weapon shield. They have nothing. And all of a sudden, something's beamed into the back of the shuttlecraft. It's a red blinky thing, which is clearly Tuvok goes and scans it. And I just, he's like, it's an explosive device of some sort. And at that point, I'm like, why are you still sitting next to it? Why don't you move away, sir?
He doesn't mind awkward silences with bombs either. He's just hanging out. Fine.
Touche, McNeil. Touche.
But it blows up. The thing blows up.
They couldn't beam it off either. So it blows up. And kaboom. Bad, kaboom.
And it's a whiteout. It blows up into a whiteout.
Right.
And as we come out of the whiteout, we see in a tight shot that Seven is being scanned.
Yeah.
and she wakes up and it's Jeffrey Combs.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Combs, as we will learn his name, Pink, later.
Pink, right? P-E-N-K, Pink.
Mm-hmm, okay. Pink.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
But it's Jeffrey Combs. I love the mustache on his makeup.
What does it do? It starts and it curls under and it's just...
It's like a catfish. It reminds me, right?
Yes,
it's like
the
whisker on a catfish.
Very, very
And true. I remember Michael Westmore and Scott Wheeler and all our makeup people talking about how they had animals.
They used animals as animals, insects, amphibians, and they had all those books and they used them as inspiration for the alien makeups.
Yeah, this feels like a catfish to me.
Very much so.
But he scans her. He realizes that she is part Borg and he says she'll be a very popular attraction. So. Yeah. We don't really understand yet what that means.
Right.
We come back and we're still in the barracks and she asks where Tuvok is. And Pink says he was injured in the explosion and she wants to see him. She demands, I want to see Tuvok. And so he calls the guards calls for Tuvok to be brought in.
Yeah.
And he says, I just want you to be happy and comfortable. That's very important for my fighters. And we see the Hirogen, J.G. Hertzler, is also in the barracks. So this is like a prison, you start to realize.
Mm-hmm.
Gladiator prison. And when he says, I want the comfort and happiness of my fighters, that's very important to me.
Yeah.
And J.G. Hertzler kind of laughs and says something like, Pink's generosity is legendary, sarcastically.
Right.
And everybody, all the other prisoners laugh there. Yeah.
But when they bring Tuvok in, Seven says that, he needs medical attention. And Pink says, okay, I could do that. And Seven's like, well, then do it. And Pink's sort of like, wow, you haven't even won a single match, but yet you're already making these requests just like a champion. So he's excited about Seven.
Yeah.
And so basically she says, are you going to treat him or not? And he says, well, are you going to fight? And this is the best line. When Tuvok says, do not comply. My condition is not severe. And then you look at his face and you're like,
God.
Really? Not severe? In whose book is that not severe?
He looks bad.
You look like cheesecloth. Your face is just
chunks of
full
flesh.
Of holes. It's gone. I mean, how are you even alive right now? Is my reaction to that.
Yes.
Very funny. Mm-hmm. Very funny. Oh, my goodness.
So Pink decides that if she's not going to fight, that he'll put Tuvok in a red match.
Right.
We don't know what a red match is, but it sounds like a death match.
Yeah. Oh, well, they say it at the end.
They do say it later on.
JG says it right here. Mm-hmm. JG says a red match, it doesn't end until one of the competitors is killed and your friend would not survive. So she basically takes one for the team. She says, I'm going to do it. I'm going to make sure I fight for him, for Tuvok. Mm-hmm. At that point, Pink, because of the Hirogen, decides that it's not going to be a red match for Seven. It'll be a blue match. So this is one that does not end in death.
Yeah, he doesn't want to lose her too soon.
Yeah, the ratings and all the,
Yeah, and because of her Borg enhancements, that she's part Borg, that he can milk this.
That's right.
Lots of people will be interested, so Seven complies. And we go out to space. We see Voyager in orbit of this planet. We go in the mess hall, and we see Harry and Tom and Chakotay, Torres. And they're all kind of looking at pads and talking about like the stats of all the fighters and all the matches.
Oh,
and everybody's really into this Tsunkatsi fighting, which is kind of weird to me that it's just weird that everybody is so blithely into gladiator style fighting.
Yeah.
I don't know. It seemed very out of character. This episode, I'm going to pause for a minute and do an overall. This episode to me felt super forced. Like I didn't feel like, you know, I feel like there's other characters that would have been more interesting to see fighting if we're going to do this story than Seven.
Okay.
I didn't like the fight. It felt like a sellout to the wrestling side of UPN at the time. I don't know. I kind of
felt that you were not so jazzed about this episode when we were doing our intro and we were doing our bonus material for our patrons. And I'm going to have the other side of it. I'm going to say now that for me, I grew up watching wrestling. So this was very exciting for me to have The Rock here and have that element there. So it didn't bother me. And funny enough, same thing with Megan. Megan also watched wrestling as a kid and she lists this episode as one of her favorites. She really liked it. Oh yeah. And I wouldn't disagree with that. I mean, I did like this episode. So your overall is you're not happy.
No, this is definitely, I will spoiler alert. This is not one of my favorites. Okay. And it felt forced. And I think the reason is because it forced characters to, like in this scene in the mess hall.
Yeah.
Torres and Paris and Chakotay and Harry, everybody talking about fighters as if we cared. And
right.
I don't think these characters had any previous, you know, history of caring about this kind of thing. So it's just strained. It felt forced to me. The other thing is I feel like Star Trek always at its best is about ideas. Mm. And even though sure we have space battles and things, having these protracted like fake fights to me didn't feel like Star Trek.
Yeah.
It felt like, I don't know.
I think it didn't feel
like our show.
The only thing that pulled me out was that it's very clear that there is a stunt double for Jerry Ryan and it's not horribly used. And it's not hidden to the point where you can't, I mean, there's a way to shoot things to make it look like it's the real person doing it. Right. I mean, and you use minimal.
They just use the double for dead on shots.
Yes. And I was like, ooh, that's a little, but I will say that, the individual who played the stunt double, I can't remember her name now, but
I can't remember either.
Had some wonderful conversations with her, by the way. And I wish, and I'm so sorry if you're listening on that, if I can't recall your name, but I would love to talk to her about this episode, you know, since she did the majority or not majority, all the fighting pretty much, everything. The beginning shot of her posing, getting ready to fight was Seven of Nine, was Jerry, but everything else was this gal.
Yeah.
So that pulled me out a lot, you know, because
yes, the double pulled me out a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This one was a tough episode for me anyway.
Yeah.
Back to the scene. So we're in the mess hall. We're comparing all the stats. I did like Harry says at one point, he says, they're talking about the fighting being really tough. And Harry's like, well, try taking a Parisi's mallet to the rib. And then you and Chakotay get into this like one-upsmanship about what sport is tougher.
It just
seemed out of character to me, all of this stuff.
Is this male toxicity? What are we doing right here? Yes. What's happening here?
What is happening?
Yeah. And he's talking about how he boxed a few Parisi's players, you know, and Harry's talking about, and it just goes back and forth. And then at the very end, you and I engage in this little fake little fight thing. So that was a little bit pushed right there.
It seemed out of character. Yeah. Valana even gets involved. She's like, well, the tattooed terror has put more men in sick bay than the Ankaran flu.
Right.
And the tattooed terror?
The tattooed terror.
Where do we get these nicknames and like one-upsmanship? Yeah. It's just bringing out like uncharacteristic behavior from all of us.
Understood. And then you kind of joking, what you say, you said, yeah, you wouldn't want to bruise your clarinet fingers, you know, again, just not usually what Paris would say.
No.
And then that's when Kim goes, oh, you want to go a few rounds or are you all talking? You're like, anytime, any place. So you join in on this male one-upsmanship.
Yeah, we start like play fighting each other.
And I say that you punch like a Ferengi, which I thought was kind of funny, actually, to say that, weird. Yeah.
It's that kind of like banter that feels, yes, kind of the version of male toxicity or like testosterone or one-ups.
Yeah.
Like it's bringing out qualities in these characters that was just like, these aren't our characters.
Correct.
These aren't our relationships. And
I agree.
So that's what the whole fighting it felt forced to me. Yeah. It felt like we were serving the wrestling block of UPN shows rather than the crossover episode,
right,
rather than real story and real character. Anyway, that's my thoughts.
Let's just end our recap. I think we're done.
So, No.
All right, continue.
All right, so we go out in the hallway, and B'Elanna and Chakotay are walking out of the mess hall where all that banter was happening.
Mm-hmm.
B'Elanna wants to go back down to watch more fights. And Chakotay's like, oh, sorry, you're not going to be able to go. I rearranged the duty shift, so you've got the bridge. And she's like, what? And he says, yeah, as first officer, you know, I'm in charge of the schedule here. And he thinks he needs to go because as an anthropologist, he's got to study this cultural phenomenon.
Yeah.
He's just making up stuff.
He is.
Yes.
And it's, again, very uncharacteristic for him to do that as well.
Yeah.
He would probably let. I feel like the real Chakotay would have said, you know what? You go down there. You have fun. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's not going to tell Torres, you're going to take this shift because I, the commander who's now in charge of the whole ship, needs to be down on that planet to watch this Tsunkatsi match. Like, really? Yeah. No, I don't think so.
It all felt very flimsy to me.
Yeah.
We go to sick bay next, and Neelix is being treated by the doctor because he's got having a reaction
he's
on his sunburn
to the Leola root ointment.
Yeah.
He can't take it.
He's a little allergic, and the doctor says, you know, Talaxian homeopathy is no substitute for medical science. Stay out of the sun. And so Neelix says he's going to go see Tsunkatsi.
Right.
And the doctor really doesn't like that idea. He hates this barbaric sport.
Right.
Yeah. He thinks that watching people hurt each other is barbaric, and he's really... Which again, I'm on team doctor here. Like, it just doesn't seem like this particular version of barbaric sport is something that any of us would be so obsessed with.
Right. So then Neelix asks, do you have any suggestions, other things for me to see? Because he's trying to, he feels like, okay, you're making a point for how barbaric this is. And that's when the doctor says, well, I'm planning on visiting the Norcadian Museum of Entomology this afternoon. There's a fascinating exhibit of beetle larvae from the Equatorial subcontinent. You're welcome to join me. And that's when Neelix is the one.
Oh, yes. That's when Neelix goes,
or fisticuffs.
Alien bugs are fair. That's a tough one. I did love the hives on his face, though. Like, his sunburn went from just sunburn to boils on his face.
Yeah.
And
But
the doctor gives him a shot because that's going to treat this, because the next cut is right to Neelix.
He's in the arena.
In the arena.
And he's cheering like crazy, which is, that transition. But the boils are gone, right? They're
everything's
all gone.
So whatever the doctor did, Neelix should have gone there first.
He should have.
Again, from the last episode, I think it was the last one.
Yeah.
Don't skip your checkups, people. Go see your doctor.
That is the lesson.
That is the lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but we're in the arena. There's Neelix and Tom and Harry and Chakotay.
So I was kind of right. Like, so it kind of looks like, remember I was talking about I was sitting away from you? I was sitting away, kind of away.
You
from
were on
you,
the end.
Because it went Chakotay, Paris, then there was a bit of a space, or Neelix was in the row ahead of you, maybe, is what it was.
I think
then
we were all in the same row.
Really?
Okay. Yeah.
It just felt like there, but I was at the very, very end. And then the third wheel, really.
You were the third wheel of all our fun
in the
days of sitting in that thing.
Yeah.
There's different fighters there. We have some fighting. And again, another thing I hated about this episode was, you know, we're watching these aliens fighting that we don't know, that we don't care about. Mm. That have nothing to do with our story.
Right.
Just to have more gratuitous fighting.
Yes.
Anyway, the lady wins. She knocks out the other competitor.
Mm-hmm.
Then Neelix asks, he doesn't understand the fighting, so now Chakotay's got to explain the rules.
Yeah.
They wear these polaron disruptors, is what Chakotay says, on their hands and feet. That's the pads that we were talking about.
Yeah.
They emit a charge into the other opponent on contact with the target sensors. So that's the things on the chest.
Yeah.
And the object of this fight is to fight and try to attack the sensor the target sensor, the other player's target sensor, without letting yours be hit, I guess.
Yeah.
So he's going through this long explanation, and Paris goes, "Hey, are you guys going to talk or are you going to watch?" Which I loved. Come on, watch this game.
And that is the introduction of Dwayne the Rock Johnson, yes. who comes. Yes. Does he have a name on this? He has to have a name too, right? He's the champion. So he comes out, and all the fanfare, the crowd goes wild. And I did love what he did with the eyebrow. He does his standard signature move, and it was great to me to see him there. It really was. And and his opponent is none other than Seven of Nine. Mm-hmm. And of course, the Voyager crew immediately are like, what the heck is going on? And we try our hardest to scream at her name. She's not listening, which is a little odd. We're figuring out, why isn't she?
Tom says it's too loud in here. Everybody's screaming so loudly that she can't hear us. So Chakotay calls the bridge, and there's B'Elanna in the captain's chair for the first time, I think. Yeah. I've never seen her.
You're right.
Chakotay says Seven is in the pit, beam her out. We go back. They're still fighting. Seven is winning, by the way, at this point. She does have superior strength to this champion. He's down. She's got the upper hand, and she says, "I have no desire to inflict further damage." And because she pauses there, he goes after her. Now he's taking her down. We go back to the bridge. B'Elanna says she can't see any life signs in the pit. She's scanning it, but there's no life signs.
Yeah.
Chakotay says, "I'm looking right at her. Mm-hmm. Recalibrate the bioscan." She said, "All I see is photonic readings, holograms."
Yeah.
We cut back to the arena. Harry says, "Holograms." Paris says they're transmitting this fight from some other location. Again, it's Tom and Harry figuring it out in the end. That's my takeaway. We figured it out. Anyway, we realize that there is a real arena. So I started in my notes calling it the arena, or the real arena where they were actually fighting, not the hologram arena where the audience was. Mm-hmm. So in this real arena where they actually are fighting, we see this fight continue. There's no audience there, though.
Yeah.
It's just Pink and his guards up in a control booth kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're transmitting this to the viewing arena. And they're watching this fight, and suddenly an alarm sounds. Pink realizes that something is disrupting their transmission. He says, compensate, and the guards change their frequency, I guess, so that they can't be tracked. And we go back to the viewing arena, and the fight's continuing, and Seven's winning again, but she hesitates again for the knockout blow that she has a chance to take here. And he takes advantage of that, ends up punching her chest sensor, and looks around the champion here. Everybody starts chanting "Tsunkatse, Tsunkatse." Mm-hmm. But this time, Chakotay and all of us, we are not joining in. Now we've lost our interest in the fighting.
That's right.
And we're all very, very worried. Mm-hmm. But Seven is just unconscious on the floor.
Yeah.
We go to Janeway's shuttle next. Mm-hmm. Which is the Delta Flyer, Tom Harrison.
Janeway's borrowed shuttle.
Yes, her borrowed shuttle. She's heading back, and she's getting a full report from Chakotay and Torres, who are on the bridge. So they're talking via a view screen. Chakotay and Torres say that they're having a very difficult time trying to track this transmission because it's being sent to every planet in the sector, and it could take days for them to figure out where Seven and Tuvok are. Chakotay does say that Neelix has gone down to meet with some Norcadian officials and try to use diplomacy. Janeway responds that she will be back soon, but it's going to take her 48 hours to get there. So she's far away on her shore leave trip. Mm-hmm. We go back to the barracks next, and the Hirogen is regenerating her or healing her. He's got some tools, I guess, he snuck in there.
Mm-hmm.
And Seven says, use these on Tuvok. He's very severely injured. And the Hirogen said he already has.
Yeah. So
I thought that was a very nice gesture for Hirogen.
It was for Hirogen, definitely. Mm-hmm. But seven questions this. She's like, why are you helping us? Mm-hmm. And he says, well, I just recognize fellow hunters when I see mm-hmm. them. Seven says, I'm not a hunter. And the Hirogen says, well, I saw your match today and your skills are impressive. Mm-hmm. And basically, you know, he gives her this pep talk and he says that there's certain things that she needs to do to get better. And that he can help her with this to make sure that she wins in her next match or when she has a red match. And essentially, this is the setup for him to become Mr. Miyagi.
Her trainer.
Way. Am I right?
That's
her
right.
trainer. Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
And he does say in here, you're either a champion or you're dead.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's it. You have two choices.
Mm-hmm. Pink does arrive and he's perfectly happy that she lost her last yep. fight.
Right. Because all the people that were cheering that someone was getting the best of the Borg, basically.
Yep.
So that's why he's so mm-hmm. happy.
Yeah. And so he's going to take advantage of all this interest and excitement in her fighting. Mm-hmm. And he's scheduled a red match for the yep. day after next.
Yeah.
So that's about 48 hours when Janeway's coming back, by the way.
Yeah.
So it's all going to happen simultaneously.
Yeah. Sounds
day
like
after
it.
Next. He said that 3 billion people paid to see her get hurt. Imagine how many will pay to watch her die.
Yeah.
And then he leaves. I was like, 3 billion people? This is billion. Pay-per-view? Pay-per-view fight with 3 billion, and he's going to make a lot more than that.
Oh, my goodness.
That's a good
take.
Good business. Yeah.
Yes.
After Pink leaves, the Hirogen says he can train her to win.
Yeah.
And she says she doesn't want to kill anyone. Mm-hmm. And he says, well, consider the alternative.
Yeah.
And so she agrees. She agrees. Yeah. She realizes with Tuvok injured in her situation, she has no choice.
Yeah.
So we have a little time cut. She's training now. She's doing some martial arts move. Jerry was.
Yeah.
That I thought was very, it was good. It was good choreography.
It looked like kung fu. It looked like Chinese kung fu, yeah, basically, what she was doing. Yeah.
It looked really good to me.
It did.
And the Hirogen corrects her. He's like, nope, that's not quite right. And she says, no, you're mistaken.
Yeah.
And then she quotes the book of Sun Katsu.
So there's evidently a book on how to fight this fight. So I did not know until this scene.
It has defenses and attacks and maneuvers all described, and she's doing exactly by the book.
Right.
She says Tuvok borrowed this from another fighter.
Yeah.
And the Hirogen shows her very quickly that she must be ready to not do things by the book. You can't learn how to be a champion by some book, that it's instinctual.
Right.
She has to be instinctual. And then she hits him while he's talking. And he goes, oh, nice. He was impressed by that.
He was.
And she says, yes, I observe that you favor your left side.
Yeah.
And he goes, interesting. Very observant. I was wounded 19 years ago.
Yeah.
During my son's first hunt. And then I became the prey.
Yeah. So we get a little backstory here. What happened?
A little backstory.
Yeah.
And as she's leaning into his story and listening and starting to feel sorry for him, she lets her defenses down and he hits her, knocks her back. And he says, you can't do that or you'll die.
Yeah.
And they kind of realize that, like, you have to be instinctual and you got to play a little dirty in this game.
Yeah.
And then they start back to training and they start doing this move, the two of them. And I was like, that is the most awkward circle dance I've ever seen. It was like some weird mating ritual. poor thing.
All right.
Yes.
Oh, goodness.
We go out to space for a minute. Voyager's still in orbit.
Mm-hmm.
Come back to the transporter room and Neelix beams in.
Yeah. He's been down talking to the Norcadians.
Doing some diplomacy. Chakotay says, how'd it go? And Neelix says, well, the Norcadian ambassador was really upset that possibly any, you know, other, you know, I think he calls them off-worlders or something, that foreigners basically are being forced to fight. He was just outraged by this.
Mm-hmm.
And Neelix says, but I don't know if it was, you know, actually genuine, because so much of the planet's revenue, they make tons of money from this game.
Yeah.
And so they're not going to do anything to jeopardize.
No, they're going to look the other way. I mean, you already gave us the numbers, 3 billion viewers. Yeah. I mean, that's incredible. That's a lot.
I did like that, you know, it's a moment of learning for Chakotay, because he says, you know, they're talking about how can people cheer for, you know, this kind of barbaric thing. And Chakotay says, well, we were cheering before Seven and Tuvok were about. So he recognizes that he was kind of being caught up in this barbaric game.
Definitely. And once it's someone you know, it's a whole different, it's not fun anymore, really.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Now you're like, oh, wait a minute. Not what we want to see.
Yeah. We go to Astrometrics. Kim and Torres are there. They report on transmissions that are coming from the ship.
Chakotay wants the status report, so he's there too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Chakotay's there. And they talk about the ship where the transmissions are coming from, though. It's very large. It's well-armed. It's it's armored. It's you know, probably too much for Voyager. And Chakotay says, well, the bigger they come.
Yep.
And he says, let's send the coordinates to Captain Janeway because we're going to need a hand.
Yeah. And that's why we couldn't find Seven in the first place. We were scanning all these planets, and in reality, she was on a ship, a fighting ship, a gladiator ship.
We go to the barracks again. Seven is practicing some moves. This was one scene where the double just jumped out to me so much.
Yes.
They're practicing their moves. The Hirogen is testing her on all these things. He says at one point, what do you see? She says, pray. He says, what do? She says, kill it. When they're done with their training, she says, thank you. And he says, thank me by winning.
Yeah.
So now she joins Tuvok. Tuvok's a little better. Tuvok is up and walking, and now he's over by the door. He's trying to disable the ship's shields and or disable their dampening field from a panel that he's opened, but it's no use. He can't access.
Yeah, he needs to access the control interface. Otherwise, he can't disable it.
And she tells Tuvok here that she's very worried about what she might do in this pit, in this fight.
Yeah.
Like kill her opponent. She's just worried. She doesn't want to do that.
Yeah.
And Tuvok says, well, as a drone, you took many lives, right? Yeah. So he sort of argues that she's got to do what she's got to do.
And Tuvok puts a button on the end of this scene. He says, do whatever it takes to survive. So he is basically saying to her, if you must kill, you must kill. And that's what he's giving her, that license right now. It's a tough pill to swallow. It really is.
Yeah. We go to the arena again, the viewing arena. And there's a cool overhead shot. I love it. Just of the arena of them looking straight down.
Yeah.
The lights seem even fancier to me. It's like the main event. It's very fancy. And we expect The Rock to come out.
Right.
Seven comes out, and then it's not The Rock coming out.
She's J.G. Hertzler.
It's her teacher and mentor. She's going to have to fight him and kill him.
See, this is the twist that most people did not see coming.
Yeah.
I'm going to say this is the twist right here.
She says in the beginning, she says, you knew and you were deceiving me. You were studying me so you can kill me. So now it's a bit of paranoia. Like she doesn't know, were you training me so that you could see my weaknesses so you can kill me? Or were you training me to kill you? Right. Either way, it's bad.
Yeah.
And he said he wants his death, a death that his son would be proud of.
Yeah.
So we realize that's why he wanted this to happen.
Yeah, he wanted to train her so well that she would defeat him.
Yeah.
And he would go out in a blaze of glory.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she says, well, I won't kill you. And then he said, well,
then I'm going to kill you. Exactly.
They start to fight. And we're kind of going back and forth from this arena with no audience to the arena with an audience.
Right.
And it's.
And
it's
the bridge, the bridge throws in here too as well, right?
Yeah. When we're on the bridge, we learn that we are approaching this vessel, the barge vessel or whatever, fighting ship.
The fighting ship, let's say.
Still
that.
Still no Janeway though. Chakotay asks if there's any sign of Tuvok or Seven. Harry says, our sensors can't penetrate the hull. Mm-hmm. We hail them. Pink appears on our view screen. Chakotay says, you know, we want our people. Do you have our people? We need them. And Pink's like, Seven's occupied right now. Chakotay gets pissed. He's like, you have 30 seconds or we're going to open fire. And Pank sort of smiles and he says, oh, fighter, I respect that.
Like that. Yeah.
But you're no match for me. And he clicks off, hangs up. Oh,
I love Jeffrey pissed. In this one. He's so good.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah. We go back to the arena.
Yeah.
As predicted, Seven is winning superior strength.
Yeah.
But she does say she wants to find another way out.
Right. She doesn't want to kill him. She does not want to kill him. And Hirogen, JG, is saying there's no other way. No other way. And then he's giving her tips. He's like, you're still dropping your elbow.
Yeah. Right?
He's like, make a choice. Hunter or prey? Hunter or prey? What are you going to do? So they keep fighting. Jumps back to
pretty,
the bridge.
Pretty even blows at this point.
I'd in
the
say
fight.
So too.
So the fight, you know, she was kind of winning at first. Now it's kind of even blows. We don't know which way it's going to go.
Yeah.
We go to space. Voyager's firing on the vessel.
Yeah.
And I noticed this vessel, this fight vessel, has giant satellite dishes, like what you would see at a TV station.
Yeah. So clearly, that's how they're broadcasting, right?
Yeah. They're broadcasting. So I guess, you know, the design and engineering of satellite dishes are
doesn't
still
change.
Used doesn't change.
No, clearly not.
Because it's funny because I had for a brief time I had Starlink, which is the internet service.
Yes.
That, you know, I don't have it anymore.
Right.
But I tried out Starlink and
with an old fashioned satellite dish too. You had
no.
That too. No.
No. What I'm saying is it doesn't use a satellite dish.
Oh, it doesn't.
It has a panel.
Oh.
That moves. So like, you know, in the future, there's not going to be these satellite dishes with a. They're not going to look like that. Like the design is going to change, just like the Starlink internet that I had briefly is not a satellite dish.
Right.
But on this ship, it's a satellite. It's a bunch of satellite dishes.
It is. And maybe maybe Pank has a co-deal with DirecTV or something like that.
Yeah, you know, that's what it looked like. It looked like some, you know. Anyway,
all right.
Voyager's firing on this vessel, but we're not winning.
We're not winning, but Kim cannot locate Seven, but he does have a lock on Tuvok. So Chakotay says beam him to sick bay, keep targeting those generators. We do have Tuvok, and Chakotay asks Tuvok, do you know where Seven is or her status? And Tuvok then informs us that she is being forced to fight to the death, and I believe that they are on the uppermost deck. And of course, guess what, that's the most protected part of that fighting ship. It's protected by multiphasic force fields and we can't even penetrate them. Nope. So now, because of the fighting ship's superior firepower, our shields are down to 40%, 32%. It's getting lower and lower. We jump back to the fighting and they're again still back and forth. Nothing is, it's kind of a stalemate, to be honest. They just, you know, someone gets a little bit of an upper hand, then the other person gets the upper hand, just back and forth.
I felt like in this part of the fight that the Hirogen was kind of winning. Like Seven was, she was tired. In fact, that shot when she's kind of down on her knees in the foreground, you see him behind her and he knows she's getting tired.
Yeah.
And so he says, he insults her in the way that he knows is going
to
work.
To
he
get
says,
her to, to fire her up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're imperfect.
Yes.
And she's like,
you don't say that to a Borg.
Don't.
No.
Yes. You're imperfect.
Insult
and now she comes back hard. She gets pissed off. She's, now her, you know, her human emotions are triggered.
Yeah, super reverse flying
ego.
Kick. Bam. Yep. And the Hirogen's like
spinning around. Like some of those moves were very sort of over the top theatrical martial arts movie. It was.
I'm okay with it. But then he still taunts her after she kicks him. He's like, "Was that the best you can do?" So it's still him. Yeah. Urging her to be more deadly so that he could die, basically.
Yeah. We go back to the bridge. The shields are down now.
Our shields are down.
Our shields are down. Mm-hmm. Harry still can't get a lock on Seven.
No.
Paris is like, let's get out of here.
Yeah.
we're dead.
See, Paris is the voice of reason. Why aren't we listening to Paris right now? But no, we're still going to
hang out. Chakotay says, no, we're going to stay. We need to knock out their signal generators for this broadcast.
Like he's using his noggin. Idea. Yeah. Because why would they continue the fight if they can't broadcast this to the thousands of planets that are receiving the signals? So that's
the
a smart
billions
move.
And
yeah,
billions.
Billions of people. Exactly. Yeah.
Suddenly Paris sees a vessel. It's the Delta Flyer.
Thank God.
Janeway's Janeway, I love her line. She says, nothing like jumping right back to work after a long
vacation.
Chakotay tells Janeway, target their signal generators.
Yes.
That's those satellite dishes.
Yes.
That's what
he should have said. Target the satellite dishes, Captain.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. We see the Delta Flyer out in space take out one of the satellite dishes. It crashes and flies off into space. Mm-hmm. We go back to the viewing arena where the crowds are cheering, but then the hollow images fritz and disappear.
Yeah.
We go back to the real arena and we learn that they've lost half their audience.
Oh.
Hank says reroute power to transmitters 5 and 6. He's trying to overcome this. We go to the bridge.
Kim says that basically they've reduced power to their force fields and he has 2 life signs in there, 7 and a Hirogen, but he cannot get an individual lock. Chakotay says, "What? Beam them both.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we do.
We do. He sends Paris and a security detail to the transporter room. And so we go back to the arena. It's near the end of this fight. The Hirogen is down. She's throwing some super fast punches here. And then the Hirogen is down. He says, never let your prey suffer. Kill it.
Mm-hmm.
And her hands are up. And
she's ready. She's about to deal the blow. The death
blow. We think so. We don't know. I don't know.
I think she was going to do it. I really do. Because it's about survival at this point.
Well, doesn't she say it? Well, let's talk about when we get there later.
Okay, fine.
But
they're beamed out.
Beamed out. We go to the transporter room. Paris and the security team have their weapons drawn.
Everybody has phaser rifles. It's like they're ready to go. Yeah.
And Paris says to 7, they're in that same position. Her hands are up.
Yeah.
Paris says, 7, step away.
You say stand away, which is
stand
the weirdest
away. That's
thing.
Right.
Because I was like, why didn't he say stand down? That's typically the verbiage that we would use on a show like this.
Yeah.
And you go, 7, stand away. Like, huh?
It's a little weird.
Interesting. Yeah.
But she responds by saying, this fight is over.
Yeah.
And she stands up. She offers her hand to the Hirogen to lift him up. And off of that moment, we go to sick bay. Chakotay tells this Hirogen that they've contacted a Hirogen hunting party close by and rendezvous and hand him off there. And 7 says, can I have a minute just to talk to this Hirogen guy?
Mm-hmm.
And so the doctor and Chakotay give them some space.
Mm-hmm.
But as the doctor's leaving, he goes, you know, I'll be close by if you need anything like a shot or a medicine or
phaser rifle.
And then they leave and 7 apologizes. She's like, you know, the doctor's just very protective. And the Hirogen says, well, he doesn't know how good a fighter you are, how well you defend yourself.
Yeah.
And he gives her his chest sensor as a trophy.
Yes, because that's what Hirogen do. They keep a trophy from all their prey. But I love this. When 7 says, well, what are you going to do now? You know, search for new prey. And he's done. He's over with that life. He's like, no, this time I will be searching for my son. And it's a very moving moment.
It's a nice moment.
Yeah.
We go to space. Voyager's at warp. We cut in astrometrics and there's 7 working. And Tuvok enters.
Yeah.
And offers assistance. And she says, fine. And then he goes to a consult. And it's the silence again. The awkward silence.
Yeah.
And he finally says, I feel compelled to speak. And he says, if she had not offered to take his place, that he would be dead. And he says, I owe you a debt of gratitude.
Yeah.
And she says, well, you can help with these recalibrations. That's it.
That's it.
You just save your life. And all you ask is like, push some buttons, some recalibration. He asks how she is. And she talks about her eye socket or something. You know, the doctor says she's healing from all the fighting, but she'll be fine. And he goes, no, I'm not talking about your physical condition.
Right.
She says, you know what? I feel like the Hirogen was right. I'm weak. I lost control. Maybe I'm losing my humanity. She says, I feel guilt. I feel shame. I feel remorse.
Yeah.
And Tuvok's response is, well, then you haven't, if you feel all those feelings, then you have not lost your humanity.
You have reaffirmed it.
You have reaffirmed it. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
There you go.
There it is.
Okay.
Okay. What's your lesson out of this episode?
Fighting is bad.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the overall lesson. Yes. Fighting is bad. And let's face it, it's unnecessary. We don't need that. I mean, you can watch. There are plenty of sports to watch that have no death involved.
Yes.
So yes. Let's go to those sports, please. Yes.
I mean, my lesson here was the reality that the human experience isn't just about lovey-dovey, happy things. It also has a dark side. All of that is human.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's the dark side was attractive to B'Elanna and Chakotay and Tom and Harry until Seven was there. They were all cheering on that dark side, that gladiator fighting. So, you know, accepting and recognizing that our humanity has a dark side, and just that awareness maybe can keep us from going to bad places, you know, doing bad things with it.
Yeah. So
that's my lesson. What about you?
Yeah. I mean, for me, I guess I was thinking about this and I kept coming up with, sometimes life will put you in a situation where you have to make a decision that may not be in line with your morals or your beliefs. And really, when you are placed in a situation like that, it's important to really acknowledge that that is not the norm for you to have to do these, to make these decisions, and to realize that you have to be good to yourself afterwards, because the PTSD or the mental side of it can really take you down if you let it, you know. So it's about healing yourself by accepting that you were placed in a situation that you had no control over. You had to do that. And that will happen to people in their life. I'm sure everyone will come across a crossroads where they have to make a decision, and both decisions are bad. They're just not decisions that are you know, upstanding or good for humanity. And so really, I guess the lesson is that you may be placed in a situation where you're going to have to make a decision that's not popular and that's not in tune with who you are. But just because you have made that decision, it doesn't change you. You're still who you are. You know, you still have the same morals. You still have the same, and to realize that you are that person and that was a momentary lapse because you were forced, your hand was forced. And so be gentle on yourself, you know, don't beat yourself up over it, which is very easy to do.
Yeah.
So that's it, really, mental health.
Nice.
Okay.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What was your rating on this episode?
I'm going to give this it was in the eights, but then after talking to you and listening to you, I've now pulled it down and I'm going to go high sevens. I'm going to go 7.9.
Wow.
I'm going to go 7.9.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well,
and then rating. What's your rating?
Yeah. It's a 5.
Wow. Okay. And I'm going to say that the average rating is going to be in the sevens. It'll be 7.2, something like that.
Let's see. I've got it right here. The Admiral and Captain average rating for Tsumkatse is 6.7.
Ooh, it's lower.
So you said 7.9. I said 5. That's almost right in the middle of you and me.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, this was one of my least favorite episodes.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Man, it happens. It's okay. There's a lot of good episodes. And some people love this episode. So, but for me, I found it out of character for a lot of us. I found the fighting to be gratuitous and forced. And I just didn't.
I thought
Jeffrey, I thought JG were great.
And
I think
Dwayne was good too.
Great.
he was. Like he didn't trip over any of his lines. He had to use some Star Trek-y lines in there too, as he had some technobabble. So
there's a lot There's a lot of good moments in this, but as an episode, I think not my favorite.
Got it. But between you Johnny, Ethan Phillips, and Robert Beltran, you three had the time of your lives.
Oh, in the stand. It's such a great so it was a, memory of it,
that was a 9.9 for you guys. Or a 10, right? Or
that was a 10.
Yeah.
That's a classic.
It was a 6 for me because I was the third wheel. But other than that, it was nice to know that you had a good time.
Fun times together up there in the stands.
Yeah. All right.
Well, thank you, everybody. Thanks for listening to our rewatch and memories of Tsunkase.
Tsunkase. And join Robbie and I next week when we discuss the Voyager episode Collective, which I'm going to guess has something to do with 7 of 9.
I'm going to guess.
All right. Yeah. Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material.
All right. Thanks, everybody. See you next week.
Bye.